Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. My Olympian mission is to promote lifelong personal development, human empowerment, out-of-the-box thinking, creative self-expression, and a dedication of one's unique talents to community service. All of my labors in this lifetime celebrate the hero's journey in myth, legend, spirituality, popular culture, and in daily life. I firmly believe that the human spirit is essentially heroic and always seeking ways to express its innate nobility and greatness, and that a life fully lived, dedicated to actualizing the highest we can conceive, is the noblest expression of human existence. Tonight, I'm very proud to bring you mages, sages, and seers, part of our Living Mythology series, and our guest is Olaf Phillips, Facilitator General of the Celestial Lodge of Sirius, among many other awesome things. Greetings and welcome, Olaf. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's been a long, busy, but wonderful day. So, looking forward actually to going to bed a little later on.
Yes. I had a very long weekend.
Good. That's the important thing. I am really looking forward to learning more about the Celestial Lodge of Sirius, and I have some information I might be able to contribute towards your curriculum.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Well, the Celestial Lodge of Sirius is a hermetic lodge. We are interested in exploring alchemical principles and processes, and not just, you know, alchemy as you're taught in school of, you know, base metals to gold. We're more about maybe spiritual alchemy and trying to change energy and change people's spirits, and, you know, and we seek to find a kind of a magical balance with nature. So that's kind of the long and the short of it. I mean, it's more complicated than that, but that's the easy explanation.
And how is it coming along? How is the lodge coming together?
You know, it's coming together. We don't really have a lot of members. You know, we're obviously, we're very selective. But, you know, we're not the kind of outfit where we just want tons and tons of people. We'd rather have people that are interested and people that are, you know, that want to push themselves forward and push the universe forward. And so, you know, we're not trying to recruit thousands of people. So we're small, but we're getting there. I have a secret project that I'm working on that seems, through a series of a chain of events and synchronicities, seems to be becoming more important. So, you know, I mean, we're just kind of moving along as the synchronicities happen and we follow them.
That sounds incredibly awesome and wise. And, do you have contacts on other, dimensions or other levels of existence that you're working with?
Yeah. So, one of the things so like a lot of people, you know, you find your kind of starting point. And for me, it was the Ganzfeld method of induction. So I started learning about how to use the Ganzfeld method. And then I eventually was able to get it to what I euphemistically call waking trance, where you're kind of tranced out, but you're wide awake and you can kind of enter into the ether. Also, for myself, I've been focusing on the secret cipher of the UFO knots from Alan Greenfield's book, The Complete Secret Cipher of the UFO Knots.
Uh-huh.
I've been using that and trying to push it forward, you know, its capabilities, and try to push the envelope with it. I also have a cipher that I cracked, which seems to be related to John Dee.
Okay.
That I work with now and again, that I'm still figuring out. So, yeah, doing a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it sounds like it. So with John Dee, these are the Enochians, the Enochian angels that you're also dealing with?
Yes. Yeah, so through using the secret cipher of the UFO knots and through the cipher that I discovered, I've been able to contact the secret chiefs of the Third Order, at least the go-betweens, and I was able to determine, you know, who my kind of mentor is, and then who is which of the Enochian archangels is dedicated to assisting me.
Okay, so you're primarily using the Enochian system then to describe the processes.
Right. I use the system to describe the processes and to figure out who I'm working with. But I don't know if you'd call it chaos magic or
okay.
It is more. My method is I try through all these communications and others. I was able to determine that at least for me, you know, it's a more direct route versus ritual. Like I have a friend who's very very good about ritual. Like he's a ritual magician, and for me, it's not so much ritual. It's more kind of gnosis. You know, the process of attaining knowledge and then using that knowledge to interface the ether. You know, I don't have an altar or anything like that, but, you know, I meditate and I project into the ether realm to try to communicate and connect with, you know, my Enochian archangel as well as my representative, for lack of a better term.
We both used a very important term that basically I work with the Theosophical system because I'm familiar with it from my life experience.
Right.
It's a really easy way of describing things in a language that people
yeah.
can get to understand through countless books that are out there. But I always make it clear
right.
that I'm not advocating theosophy or any particular understanding of theosophy.
No.
Theosophy is a great way of describing what we're doing so that somebody could understand it. And it happens to have, you know, all the words you need. And I too have friends who are
right.
ceremonial magicians, and they're very, you know, deep in their magic. I don't do ritual either, except for on very
yeah.
rare occasions. And I don't go through any of the preparations that are described.
Right.
It's just basically again, a roadmap for navigating through various states of being and then accessing them. So we have a lot in common
right.
there. We have a lot in common with, you know, the both of us are kind of shamanic and exploratory.
Yes.
And that is yeah. a really good thing because then you get direct experience. You get gnosis,
exactly.
interactions and your adventures rather than through contemplating what's been written by others in a book.
Exactly. I found, you know, for myself, I found a more of a shamanic style of route where it's directly interfacing. And, you know, everybody does it differently. And I think one
yeah.
of the big things that people need to understand about magic with a K is that it's your own personal thing that, you know, you can
mm-hmm.
read 1,001 books, you know, but really all they are is like, they're kind of like, you know, guidebooks that say, okay, well, this is something you should know, or that's something you should know. Or if you mix this and that, you get the, you know, if you mix A and B, you get C, you know, but at the end of the day, the way that you interface the ether realm or whatever you want to call it, it's really personal. And like I said, for my friend, you know, he's a ritual magician and he's very good at it. And that's how he does it. I have some other friends who are tarot card readers and that's how they do it. You know,
right.
in my case, I commune with nature and I project my thoughts into the universe, and that seems to work for me. So, you know, it really comes down to, you know, things like theosophy or, you know, or Thelema or, you know, Wicca or, well, not Wicca, the religion, but Wicca, the magic style, because they are different, right? You know, they're a good place to start because it gives you structure. You know, I started more on the shamanic side of it, but it gives you a structure, and then as you're moving along you can kind of make the structure out, and then you start to adopt this structure. In fact, the you know, the secret cipher of the UFO knot, the Greenfield book, it was very essential for me because engaging the secret cipher in and of itself is a magical working, and by doing that, I started to learn conceptually like how it worked. And I started to understand the symbolism, which for me is a very important part, because most of what I get back is very symbolic. So working with that, you know, it helped me to understand how I'm interfacing ether. But again, I'm talking too much. But again, it's, you know, it's a personal style. I use a couple of different things and, you know, and kind of munge it together.
Well, that's the way it's done. It's I used to compare doing magic to working out. Yeah. You know, basically there are all these different systems. Some might appeal to you, some might not appeal to you. Then there are types of physiques that you want to attain by using these systems.
Right.
So you have to find what'll take you where you want to go, or you can just go and mess around with weights, you know, and the exercise equipment. That's fine too if you want to do it. Just because a system worked for somebody doesn't mean it's going to work for you. It's something to try until you gain the mastery of your own body and your communication with your own body. And then after that, you do what works until it doesn't work, and then you do something else. You know, and it's a continuously evolving thing. And it's the same with metaphysical work that, you know, basically these are good ways to start and to learn the basics. But unless you're in there to learn a particular system, like I want to be a Thelemite or I want to be a chaos magician or, you know, whatever, unless you're going down a path that's identified, like with weights, it would be, I want to do 5x5 by Reg Park, and that's what I'm doing. You'll eventually find what works for you and you'll use it until it no longer works as well. And then you seek for something else. And it's essentially the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, for me personally, like I found, I guess as did you, that the shamanic route seems to be the better one for me, because it makes me in tune with the world around me, and then the world talks to me. But at the same time, you know, I'm also interfacing other tools like the secret cipher or the cipher that I discovered, you know, or which is a super secret cipher, or, you know, using a pendulum or fire scrying or whatever I'm using. What I try to do personally is that I bring in tools that feel right, and I bring the tool in, and then I use it, you know, just in my normal operation. So that seems to have worked really well. And I think the waking trance, I think is very useful. And I've actually, you know, taken people through it multiple times. You know, I think the largest group I ever did was 7 people at once, like kind of shepherding them, you know, into the trance, and then have, you know, sending them energy while they're in the trance to help back them up, and then bringing them out of the trance, and then, you know, talking to them about what they saw and helping them figure out what they saw. Because one of the things that I believe very strongly is that I'm not here to tell you what you saw. You saw what you saw. I can help you interpret it, but I'm not here to tell you what it is.
That's wise too, because how else will someone learn unless they experience directly and, you know, try to give voice to what they experience. Now, you mentioned chaos magic, and I know of chaos magic, but that might be a term that's not familiar to very many people. So would you care to explain what chaos magic is?
Well, it's, you know, to me personally, you know, it's this idea that I don't need a wand and I don't need anything else, that I can generate, you know, I can generate magic just out of midair, that I'm using the entropic forces of the universe, the energy that's being put out by the universe to manifest things. And, you know, you don't need to have I don't need to have an altar, and I don't need to have anything. I can do it just sitting here right now.
Right.
You know, so it's that idea that I'm using the chaotic energy of the universe to create order.
I believe the same. I have altars everywhere, but that has more to do with the fact that I'm Greek than anything else. Because Greeks filled their houses with statuary and images of mythic antiquity. And yeah, so that's where I get that from. But seriously, my house is like one big series of altars all over the place. I don't use them for magical purposes, though. You know,
it's an Elysian palace.
Yes, of course. So I do much the same thing. You know, I imagine things in my mind. Sometimes I'll use traditional things. Sometimes I won't. And I remember I had a chaos magician on the show once. I don't remember his name offhand, Elwood something, but he had written a book on pop culture magic. And I found that out on my own, that you don't even have to use traditional images associated with gods or a particular type of mythology. If video game images resonate with you, you can use the content from a video game, you know, to...
It's what makes sense to you. You know, it's funny because, you know, when you read books about it, like they treat scrying, right? Or you take classes in it, you know, they treat scrying like it's this magnificent event. And, you know, I'm of the opinion that anybody can do it. You know, we all have the power to do these things. I'm not special. I just read a lot, you know, and I have the constitution to actually say, you know what, I don't care. I'm going to try. Right.
Right.
But I was teaching some people, you know, how do various things, you know, like the energy snowball, as I call it.
Uh-huh.
But in this case, I was teaching them to scry. And so typically, you know, they'll tell you use a ball, like a crystal ball, use water, you know, use a mirror, use a black mirror, use a pendulum, you know, all kinds of different things. And I thought to myself, you know, that's great, but I think it'd be more impactful if I taught them how to do it using a bagel. And so I actually taught these people how to scry using a bagel. Like literally go to the store, go buy a bagel in the bakery section, come home, cut it in half, and you can scry using a bagel. Because it doesn't, it's just a tool. You know, you can use a piece of bread. I mean, you can use a rock. You can use anything you want. It's more a mindset, right? And so, you know.
That's very true. You could use fire. A lot of people just use fire. You could look at the clouds and scry.
Oh, yeah.
In Greece, when I was growing up, everybody knew how to read the coffee. You know, you drink Greek coffee, which is very, very thick and has muddy coffee in it. And then when you finish, you turn it upside down, let it dry for a little bit. Then you pick up the little coffee cup and you see images. And they would use that images to do, you know, like do-it-yourself fortune telling. And some people got really good at it, the people you talk to read your cup. But yeah, bagel would do it. Anything would do it. I've gotten really good drawings from looking at a shag rug, the different patterns in the shag rug. So
You can. Yeah, absolutely. I get that.
Yeah, they used to have like bibliomancy. That works really good. I used to teach that to people when I taught a college course bibliomancy, and they would say it sounds ridiculous. And I tell them, try it. And I have everybody try it. Just grab a random book, ask a question, open it up randomly, put your finger on a page randomly, and see what it says. And almost all the time, the information that they got by doing that, and again, I wasn't teaching them magic or anything, would be something very relevant and very insightful to what it is. And, you know, all of this experimentation leads you to, you know, what is life really all about? How is this different than a dream? You know, because once you become aware of synchronicity and you have systems of communicating with the universe through synchronicities, it's amazing how much information you can tap into and access.
Well, yeah, and, you know, the way that I think about it is that, you know, everybody has a different view. You know, there's that old saying that just because I'm a witch, I'm not necessarily a Wiccan. And just because I'm a Wiccan doesn't mean I'm a witch, right?
Right.
And I kind of took that to heart. And, you know, I don't see, for me personally, like I don't see magic or occultism like as a religion. I see it more as a science, like a lost form of science. Mm-hmm. And we're interfacing this like ether space. You know, like in dreams, like I had this crazy dream, you know, but it was very insightful and it lasted for a really long time, but it was very insightful to me. But, you know, this idea that we use these tools, you know, I could scry, I was panning for gold earlier today and I have a big bucket of water and I have a too much gold rush and I had a big bucket, I have this big bucket of water, right? and there's some stuff that dropped in it from my tree. And if I wanted to concentrate long enough, I could probably see something in the water, because it's about your will and your intent. And the big thing that I try to teach people is that, number one, you have to have the confidence that what you're going to do is going to work.
Right.
Right. You have to believe in what you're doing. And that's true of you being a mechanic, you lifting weights, you know, you driving for Lyft or Uber, flying an airplane, you know, writing a book. You have to believe in what you're doing, that you can do it. And the second part is will, that you have to focus and say, I want to do this. Like, I want this to work. You have to put all your energy into it, saying, I'm going to make this work. So you have confidence and you have will, right? And then it's intent. You have to say, what do I want out of this? And don't be greedy. Don't be, you know, narcissistic. And, you know, I try to tell people, like, I was talking to somebody and, you know, she wanted to win the lottery because, you know, like many of us, she's just tired of working. She wants to retire. And so she's trying to manifest winning the lottery. And I said, look, the universe doesn't work that way. You know, the more you want to win the lottery, the less it's going to work, right? I said, you need to put your will toward the universe and say, hey, I would like to be more comfortable. I'd like to make a little more money and be more comfortable, right? Here, and have more time with myself, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the universe will provide. And so, you know, I taught her how to do the energy snowball. And she did that, and she kind of felt it, and she was feeling good about it. And I said, okay, now I just want you, you know, to put in the back of your mind, I did a sigil for her. I sent her the sigil. I said, put this in your wallet and put all your energy into the sigil and say, look. And the sigil represented being more comfortable, having abundance of joy and health and happiness, and make a little more money. And I put it in it. The next day, she sends me a message. She says, oh, my God, it worked. And I said, what do you mean? And she says, well, I just got an email from these people. They're offering me a job, or they want to interview me for a job that is not like anything that I do right now, but it pays like way more money. And
awesome.
She's like, I'm excited about it. Yeah, I'm excited about it. And, you know, and I think I can do it. I said, no, you can do it. And if you want to, and you should pursue it. But also, you know, you have to remember when you do this stuff is that the universe will make the opportunity available, but it's up to you to seal the deal.
Right.
You know, you can't just say, give me a new job. Like, it'll present you with the opportunity of a job you might like, right, or make you happy or whatever, but it doesn't mean you're going to get it. You have to get it yourself. You know, it takes you to 90%. The last quarter mile, you got to run that by yourself.
You know Maria Andrea, is that correct? You're aware of her. She's in Tim Beckley's anthologies, as are we, and she's published like a bunch of stuff,
oh, yeah.
Mostly through Tim. Yeah, she writes a lot of really good books on using positive magic to manifest you know, various things. She's really good with that.
Yeah, positive. You know, my belief is that positive magic is the best magic.
Mine,
you know,
too.
We don't need to hurt it. Yeah, we don't need to hurt other people and to take away from other people. You know, if we put good vibes out, get good vibes back. The best way I ever heard it described to me is, you put shit in, you get shit out. You put goodness in, you get goodness out.
Yes.
And I think that's a very important concept. You know?
Now, are you planning on having like a different grades of initiation? Are you going to be making like a ladder structure to take somebody from point A to point B, or something? Are you conceiving something different?
So in my lodge was actually chartered by Alan Greenfield in the Free Illuminist
path.
And as part of that, we don't do like levels, like grade levels, right? So, you know, like the Golden Dawn or the OTO or whatever, they have all these levels. Right, Masons, everybody's got a level. Well, in our case, you're initiated or you're not initiated. But what I've tried to do is come up with like modules. So like every time you complete a, you know, a course of study, you know, you get something for that course of study, right? So there, you know, ultimately what I want to get to is that when I have more members, and the member, because I want to offer these trainings to everybody. I don't,
right.
You don't need to be initiated to learn how to make an energy snowball. That's ridiculous. But there are things that only initiated people can learn. Right.
Right.
Well, in the general sense, you know, I want to get it to a point where eventually, you know, like anything else, you know, there's some sort of symbolic representation of the classes that you've completed or the, you know, the modules that you've completed versus like a level. I want it to be very flat, that everybody's equal. But at the same time, you know, we need to recognize, okay, this person has tried to learn how to do these things. So I want to kind of figure out a way to denote that they've learned certain things, but it doesn't make them better than anybody else.
Right.
You know, when I was a kid, I'm Scandinavian, right? Obviously.
Obviously.
You know, in Scandinavia, they have a thing called Janta. And the idea behind Janta is that we're all equal and nobody's better than anybody else. Everybody has the capability to do anything they want to do, but we're not better than anyone. We're just different.
Right.
And so, you know, maybe somebody wants to do scrying, but it's, you know, somebody else wants to do chaos magic, or somebody wants to do, you know, tantric magic. And, you know, somebody else really isn't interested in that, but they, you know, they want to learn the I Ching or whatever. So there's a way that you can learn whatever you want. And it's more denoting what you know how to do. So if another person is like, oh, how do you do tantric magic? You know, well, that person over there, oops, they've got an X on their shoulder. Well, that means they know how to do that. I'm going to go talk to them so that they can help me. It's less about them being superior and more about them helping. So I think that's a very important thing that I want to do.
That is awesome. I also believe that you know, nobody's better than anybody else. You know, we all have the same potential. It's what we do with ourselves, where we apply our attention,
yeah.
And what we repeat enough till it becomes a skill or a belief or something. So that's a great thing.
Right.
I'm working with a lot of people now, more than a handful, on putting together like a lodge structure also. And now, I'm talking to people about the different types of charters. I personally avoided joining any initiatic structure because then you're bound by vows of silence. So my general rule is, if it's in the popular culture, then it's not a secret. So
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree wholeheartedly. I mean,
there were complaints about magical lodges that I came across where they're saying that they went through all this to get initiated, and then somebody taught them the Hebrew alphabet, you know. So, yeah, the Hebrew alphabet is a series of tools, and you need to know how to use them. But the Hebrew alphabet and a lot of that information you can get now online without even spending the years and the money to get rare occult books like they used to when I was a kid.
You know what it is to me? Is that when I think about the lodge, right, is that when you were initiated, at least for me, in my lodge, right, when you're initiated in the lodge, there's a trust.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not so much that you necessarily, I mean, inevitably there is secret information that's contained within the lodge. Just like if you go to work, there's secret information about where you work that you just have, right? But to me, it's more of a function of trust and assistance. And, you know, you're all together bound by a common ideology, right?
Right.
And if you need help doing something magical, right? Because let's be perfectly honest. Some magical processes, because just because I don't do ritual doesn't mean that I don't believe that there are certain processes that you have to carry out.
Right.
You know, there is a way things work. But some of those things outside of a magical context, people don't understand, and they are afraid of it, or they are uncomfortable, or they don't understand it, or whatever. So what the lodge does is it gives you a safe space that everybody that's there, right, has signed up for this. That they are interested, they're engaged, you know, and it's kind of like, you know, okay, well, I want to do this thing. I need some help, you know, and I'm not going to be judged for it, right? You know, so like if you have somebody and in their style of magic, they need to use a pentagram, right? Pentagrams are not innately bad. It's
right.
all how you use it. Well, but if you just go out into the public and say, well, you know what, I'm going to draw a pentagram in the center in the dirt. I'm going to stand in the center of it, and I'm going to yell some stuff. You know, people look at that and they make assumptions about who you are.
Yes.
Inside the lodge, the people there are like, well, I understand why you're doing that. Can I help you? And they're not there to judge. And also, if you do that, right, then, you know, they're not going to tell anybody. Because let's be honest, if you know, somebody finds out that you're drawing pentagrams in your backyard and howling at the moon, there's a perfectly good reason why you're doing that. It's not a bad pentagram. It's actually quite a good one. And you're trying to interface the power of the moon. It doesn't, you know, it's a good thing. And you're trying to help
right.
people, not hurt anybody. But the outside world would look at that and make assumptions. So, you know, maybe somebody in the lodge has some land somewhere. And they're like, hey, you're a member of the lodge. You know what? Here's directions to my my plot of land out in the forest. There's nobody out there. Why don't you go ahead and go out there and you can do your ritual and nobody will take, you know, I know what you're doing, but I don't care. But I'm also not going to tell anybody. So there's kind of a secret of processes and procedures, you know. So
right.
for me, I see it more as a trust thing, that you can trust the people that are in there. That's why, you know, I obviously can't tell you the initiation that we perform,
right.
but the initiation, at least for my lodge, a lot of it is about openness and about no secrets and not hiding anything, that you are as you are. And however that is what it is. You know, you're not being judged by anybody, and you're not being, you know, you're establishing a trust level with the people around you, and you don't have to worry, you know. And I think that's really important. That's what it is to me. It's more like a secret clubhouse where when you go inside, like, you know, everybody there and nobody's going to look at you funny because, you know, you put feathers in your hair or you've got a tattoo of a certain symbol or, you know, you do a certain type of magic, because there are certain types of magic that people don't like tantric magic, for example,
right.
that people don't understand. And they, you know, they might think it's a bit odd. And so don't talk about it. You know, go inside the lodge. You can find other people that are interested in it. You guys can share information, maybe help each other out. And it, you know, it doesn't leave the lodge. So there's a level of trust and safety. And I think that's really what it is for me.
That's a very healthy way of looking at it. And you said some really awesome things. So I'm very glad. And why Sirius? Are there any particular set of teachings around Sirius?
So the reason why Sirius is because so I had a series of events happen to me that were a little strange. And I was on my land in Oregon, and I have land in the forest, and it's not near anything. It's on the side of a mountain. I mean, there are a few people that live there, but not really, you know, there's really nothing there for about 30 or 40 miles in either direction. And I believe that there's a portal. I've actually been told, you know, through the cipher that there's two portals that exist on my land.
Okay.
And I had gone up there to market, and we were leaving. We're going to leave the property, and we're hiking back through the forest to where the car was. And I found a happy birthday balloon, like, on the ground.
Yes.
And right. And I was like, oh crap, because that means something.
Right.
So I go back. Yeah. So I drive 45 minutes back to the hotel. We didn't camp out on the land. But I drove back to the hotel, and I called up Alan Greenfield, who's my mentor. And I said, okay, I got the happy birthday balloon. He goes, oh, a gift is coming. Right. And I'm like, yes. And I'm like, okay, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. He's like, and he was very clear. He's like, you should found a lodge and explore what the hell is happening to you. Because the balloon was at the end of a long chain of weird events. And I'm like, okay. And he's like, be aware you're about to receive a gift. And I'm like, okay, well, I don't even know what to call it. Right. Do I call it the, you know, the Hermetic Lodge of Snoopy. I mean, what do I call this thing, right? And I had no idea. So we get in the car and we're driving. And we're up in the extreme northern part of California, out by a place called Alturas. There's really nothing there. I mean, for 60 miles in any direction, it's just a forest and grassland. And I'm driving along, and there is a blue star balloon hanging in a tree. Next to it, about 40 feet up, next to it is a sports balloon. And the closest town is 60 miles. And it's just a Mylar balloon. Like, I have no idea how it got there. But it dawned on me. I'm like, oh, my God, the blue star is Sirius. And Sirius has a lot of power in various ways. And it, you know, it just all kind of made sense to me. And so I named it the Celestial Lodge of Sirius, because I think the blue star was my gift. The knowledge of knowing that I, you know, that I wanted to base it on Sirius. And it was going to take a team effort, right? So I got the sports balloon too.
Very cool. My particular personal mythology ties into Sirius. As you know, I'm a Lemnian Greek, and Lemnos is the island where the Argonauts went. It was the island of Amazons. And in addition to Jason, the Argonauts going there, Orion went there as well when he was blinded to get his vision restored. Lemnian soil was supposed to be therapeutic, but it's also symbolic. You know, the Lemnians had the same mysteries that they had on Samothrace. I'm sure he went there to be illuminated so that he was no longer blind. But Sirius is called the Dog Star, and that dog belongs to Orion. Orion is also an earlier or lunar version of Hercules, because he wears the lion skin in the club, just like Hercules. And the Argonauts, the children of their children who were born on Lemnos, because the Argonauts stayed there for around a couple of years, they were ousted at some point, their dynasty, and they went to Africa, where they became intermixed with the Dogon tribe. And the Dogon tribe were people who had the lore about Sirius, you know, being a binary or a trinary star. And, you know, they had all this information that Robert Temple and other people wrote about. So we have a lot of Lemnian lore about amphibious beings, very similar to the Nomo. So there's that tie as well. But I was wondering, because when you said in your email that you're calling the Celestial Lodge of Sirius, a lot of my life, what I'm working on without it being visible, is those mysteries. I've worked on those mysteries for most of my life. So I took that as a good omen, and maybe we could work together on some of this stuff, because it's really wild.
Absolutely. And you know, we can talk about some other stuff, too, you know, that I think would help out. But, you know, it's, I mean, that's how synchronicities work, you know, that I have a Sirian lodge, you know, a Sirius lodge, and, you know, you're drawn to Sirius for a lot of reasons. You know, it's hard to, like, quantify, like, a synchronicity, but it's like I had a hotel room a couple of days ago, and, you know, if you add up all the numbers, it was a 9, you know, nines and threes and 13s, you know, they haunt me. Because it's symbolic to me, you know, in a lot of ways. So, you know, it all kind of fits together. You just have to give it enough time. Like, the biggest challenge for me is patience. Just waiting for it to sort itself out.
Do your Arthurian mysteries, will the Arthurian mysteries that you're pursuing fit into the mythology of the Celestial Lodge?
The Arthurian mysteries? Oh, you mean about the Tautha?
The different locations that you had associated with the Arthurian treasures or the treasures of Ireland?
Oh, yes. I think so. I think so. I mean, you know, I'm still trying to pursue that. It's just, it's a very slow process. But yeah, no, I think it, you know what it is, Hercules? I think it all fits together. It's just, it's a function of time. You know, everything that, like, you take a person, just a random person, and it's like, if you look at all the things that they're interested in, ultimately all these things come together. You know, if you're kind of buying into the system, everything eventually merges and it makes sense, right? And it's just a function of waiting while you learn what you need to learn, which is gnosis. You learn what you need to learn in the process to see the connection, you know, the connectivity between the events. You know, when I was a kid, I used to watch a show. It's called Connections with James Burke. And my favorite episode was that he was walking on the grounds of Oxford, I think, and he has a briefcase, and he's waxing poetic about Oxford and whatever. And then he says, oh, because, you know, he was a bit snarky. And he says, oh, you're probably wondering why I'm carrying this briefcase. Would you like to know what it is? Oh, of course you do. And so he turns it around and he opens it up. He goes, this is a suitcase nuclear bomb. And then he goes, and now we're going to figure the rest out. And he closed it and he tossed it up in the air. And then when it hit the dirt, it was like in the Roman times. And he charted this entire, like, insane chain of events from, like, you know, 1,000 years ago up until like 1970 when they figured out how to make a micronuclear device. And I used to love that show because it shows the interconnectedness of all things. You know, so anybody who's listening to this, a lot of the things that you like or that you're drawn to or whatever, there's actually a structure to it. It's just really, you have to give it enough time to reveal itself. And you just can't rush it. The universe doesn't work on your, you know, on your clock. It works on its clock.
That's very true. And some things don't make sense until years later after the fact. I can think of tons of examples where something that I perceived in a meditation or got through a trance or my channeling, it made no sense at the time, or it sounded kind of ominous and scary. And then it happened years later, and it was anything but ominous or scary. It was just the way things unfolded, and I was fine with it when it happened. But yes, some part of us knows. And we've spoken to other times too. Like I've been collecting all these books that I never read. And I was taking them with me, and even though I'd sold books before, given books away, these I held on to. And recently, within the past 5 or 6 years, I'd say, all those books all of a sudden became phenomenally important. And I don't have to scour the globe trying to find them. I've had them, and I've been collecting them slowly throughout my life. So some part of me knew that I would be at this point. And made sure that I had one less thing to focus on when I got here.
And my, you know, my gut instinct about the Arthurian treasures or the treasures of the, you know, the Tauta de Danann, you know, my gut instinct is that I don't know, I don't know that anybody will ever find them, but I believe that if they symbolically exist in multiple places. If you can find the conjunction points where, like I, you know, we talked about before, like here, where I think there's symbols of the four treasures here, it denotes a place of energy where you can actually do things, and things will manifest and things will happen. So, you know, that's what I've been trying to do is to find places where these symbols, these structures exist symbolically, and to chart them as places of power. And then, you know, eventually when COVID is better, right, you know, which should be soon, you know, I can go there and then I can meditate there, or, you know, I can think there or sleep there or whatever and try to figure out why it's important to me. But yeah, to me, it's like a key to a puzzle that if you have these, you know, if you have these elements in a locality, then that locality has more energy to it, if that makes sense.
That makes a lot of sense, and it's something that you found that it wasn't in a book or in someone else's spiritual quest. Those symbols arose and have meaning, and you've researched them, and there's a validity to what you found. So that might become part of the sacred landscape that you have. Like, for instance, I'm in Tenafly, New Jersey now, and that's near New York City. And in a lot of the theosophical and neo-theosophical and other like fringy occult lore, I guess, there is over Manhattan, there's an etheric temple of the 12 solar hierarchies. And the Statue of Liberty ties into the story and so forth. And I have used that mythology to gain very powerful insights and in my visualizations, to direct certain actions, you know, sending positive therapy out into the world for liberty.
Right.
And all these abstract concepts that we see now are very precious, and we need to fight for them. So that's part of my fight for them, and make use of that structure.
Sure.
That's there in the ether. So that's part of the mythology here.
It's interesting you mention that. If you live in a place, for your listeners, if you live in a place, you should really investigate it, because you find that there are interesting things. Like you were saying, that over Manhattan is this, this temple that exists in the space over Manhattan. In Sacramento, ever since I was a little kid, I always got a kind of weird feeling about it. And it turns out that in Sacramento, not only is there a pyramid, right? There's this building that was designed as a step pyramid, but the architect that designed that designed at least a couple of other buildings in Sacramento, which you wouldn't think Sacramento, you'd think San Francisco, right? But in Sacramento, he actually put statuary on the top of some of these buildings that are occultically significant, gods and goddesses. And then, you take San Francisco, supposedly the Transamerica Pyramid, some people believe that it has an Illuminati context, but other people, believe that it's just a power, it's a power source. And there are other buildings that surround it that create a kind of sacred geometry. So, these things are in cities that you live in. You just have to investigate it. Like Washington, D.C. has a whole series of Masonic symbols that are laid out in its streets. London, Edinburgh, these Paris, these places are symbolically designed. So, they are places of power. Each one obviously has a different kind of power, but, no matter where you are, whether you're in Tokyo or Shanghai or, London or wherever you are, these things exist.
Yes, they do. And if you take the time to research, as you suggest, you'll find a lot of amazing things in the architecture, in the statuary, and in the floor, in the layout of the streets. There's lots of interesting information hidden in there.
Exactly. And, a lot of people ask me, they say, because, unlike anybody else, I matured over time and I became more interested in this stuff over time. And, I became more powerful over time. And everybody thinks that when you've achieved a certain amount of information or power or whatever, you're some sort of special person. And I'm not. I'm a normal person. I watch Gold Rush. I love Gold Rush. And, I'm watching Army of the Dead. It's like I'm a normal guy. But at the same time, somewhere in the process, I became aware of these things. And I try to tell people, I'm like, look, first of all, you have the power to do these things yourself. There's no reason that I can do them and you can't. You just have to will it and have the focus and the good intent. But I said, number two, you actually have to watch. You have to watch the world around you and look for the signs. And I say the signs are all over the place, but you have to have the courage and the interest to see them. If you want to see a UFO, people are, I can't see UFOs. I've tried my whole life. I was on this, there's this app, and I got invited to it, and I was poking around in it. It's called Clubhouse, right? And I'm on this thing, and I'm listening to this woman, and she's talking, and she's saying, I've wanted to see a UFO my whole life, and I've never seen one. And I live near NASA, but I've never, seen a UFO. And meanwhile, I'm sitting in my backyard, and I see this screwy light up in the sky. I'm like, wait a minute. I run inside. I get my night vision goggles, and holy crap. I saw, three of them, three weird aircraft, high-altitude aircraft. And I'm like, I'm watching one right now, It's like, because I'm looking up in the sky to look for things that are weird. I'm walking the dog. I know, really mundane. I'm this amazing mystical person. I'm walking the dog, and there's a balloon sitting there, right? And it shouldn't be there, but it is, or whatever. And it's like, okay, I need to take that and think about it and decide what that means, right? And figure it out. So I'm watching and I'm listening and I'm learning all the time. So, you know, for all your listeners out there, it's like, open your eyes, look, see. If something seems a little screwy, it probably is. Write it down and think about it, and the answer will come to you.
That's very true. And a lot of our world, if you look at the fringes, like with a magician's hand, don't look where he's drawing
right.
your thing because he's doing something else. I found that our waking reality is much the same way. It becomes more and more dreamlike mm-hmm. the more you explore it. You'll get all sorts of symbolic things like synchronicities, you know, going on all mm-hmm. the time, just like symbolic associations are part of dream. And if you don't pay attention to what's going on, but you pay attention to the edges, you see that there's a lot of things, you know, happening that, you know, really give you a different picture of what is going on. And if you start studying your perception too, you become aware of how much you're projecting into the world. So your brain projects things out there all the time. And it's amazing what, and you can catch your brain before it edits it. And so much is edited out too.
Right. Well, and this is, you know, this is the allegory of the cave, right? That, you know,
yeah.
these people are stuck in the cave. The door is right there, but they can't find it. They just kind of aimlessly wander around the cave looking for the answer. Well, the door is right there. It's just they're lost in their own contemplation and they can't see the door. One of the most powerful things I ever learned is when I got certified in neurolinguistic programming, that, you know, the guy was saying that it's something like every day, you know, you get over 6 million forms of stimulus, whether it's
right.
touch or smell or sight or taste or whatever. And your mind is filtering out 99% of that stuff. So what you, and you know, you're not capable of handling all 6 million points of reference, but what you need to do, but what you need to do is you can handle a hell of a lot more than you normally on any old day are, right? So you need to go into that filtration mechanism, you know, that they talk about in neurolinguistic programming. You need to go into that filtration mechanism and tune the knobs so that you can start to see the magical stuff as well.
Right.
But you have to look.
That's very, very true. And that course I taught in the college that I was speaking of before,
right.
I used to have them pay attention to how often things happen. Like how often are you thinking
right.
of someone and that person calls you or you bump into the person? How often are you thinking of a song and then a car passes by with the window open and the song is at the exact same spot? How often did you get into
yep.
like an argument and then you turn on the TV and that argument is playing itself out on whatever show came on the TV? And I would have them.
It happens a lot.
And it happens all the time, but we're taught to filter it
right.
out. And if you stop filtering mm-hmm. it out, you're amazed at how often these things happen. And it kind of forces you to look at how we define reality and how we interact with reality, because reality is so much different than what we tell ourselves or what we've been taught that it is.
Well, and you know, the way that I think about it, again, back to the notion of occult sciences, right, is
mm-hmm.
that everything in the universe is made up of atoms.
Right.
And the density of something is based on the vibrational speed of the atom. So when they're vibrating, if they're vibrating slower, it's more dense. If they're vibrating faster, it's more fluid or gas or whatever. And it's like, you know, as, you know, through we've seen tested in science that intent can actually change the speed at which the atoms are vibrating. They have been able to quantifiably test this, you know, and it's like, if that's the case, then at some level, I'm not going to wake up tomorrow morning and you know, I'm going to have a jet plane that formed out of my barbecue in the backyard. But at the same time, you know, we can project that energy. It changes vibrations to manifest things that it is possible. And, you know,
right.
Can you manifest huge things? I don't know. You know, I haven't gotten that far. Will I? I don't know. But I'm going to try. You know, I'm at least going to give it the college effort. You know?
Did I ever share with you my millions of dollars story?
Yes, you did. I don't remember the detail of it. But, yes, I recall this story. And it's very funny.
as we close, I'll repeat it. But it's about the things that we're talking about. It's a good illustration. In one of my communions with the universe, I informed the universe that I would like millions of dollars to come my way, you know, that effortlessly.
Right.
Millions of dollars.
Yes.
And it started the very next day. I got millions of dollars continuously. They were all fake millions of dollars, though. You know, they were like,
right.
They had Obama on them or the Statue of Liberty or, you know, something.
Right.
They came up with chocolates people gave me where the cover was a $1 million bill. But something showed me that it was definitely listening and convinced me that this can happen, you know, but I don't know if it's because they didn't specify real spendable money or it was something else, but.
I think it also has a sense of humor.
Yes. Yes. I think so too.
Yeah.
And on that note, I wish this conversation wasn't ending, but we'll continue the conversation on another day. How can people get in contact with you? How can they tap into your wonderful magazines and podcasts and, you know, all the great stuff you're doing?
Well, so if you're interested in the Celestial Lodge of Sirius, the best way is that we have a page on Facebook called the Celestial Lodge of Sirius. There isn't a whole lot of information there. But what there is there's a form, and just fill the form out and fill in your name and your email address and, you know, answer the questions. And, you know, when we go to admit new members, you know, we can contact you, or, you know, if you want just information about when we're going to offer the classes, you know, there's a section in there. If you have a question or whatever, just say, hey, you know, let me know when the classes start or things like that. You can find me on Facebook. My name is Olaf Phillips. I'm easy to find. You can find me on Instagram. It's Paranoia Mags. You can follow my misadventures and road trips to weird and bizarre places and baking because I like to bake. In fact, I made a cherry pie today. cherry cinnamon. It was actually quite good. But, you know, I wish it was thicker, though. I'm working on a consistency on that one. The cherries are very difficult because they're very juicy. But anyway, so I'm easy to find. Paranoia Mags on Instagram, Olav Phillips on Facebook, Celestial Lodge of Sirius on Facebook. If you're interested in the secret cipher, the UFO knots, which is really where a lot of this started for me, you can get it on Amazon. Just search for the complete secret cipher, the UFO knots. We have an actual web tool that you can use called thesecretcipher.com. Where you can actually use the tool and type things in, you know, if you're reading the book and you want to try it or whatever. We have an app on the iPhone. But no, that's about it. I'm pretty easy to find. We have a Paranoia podcast. It's on iTunes.
Awesome things. Thank you so very much, Olaf. I enjoyed today. I enjoy all our conversations, and I'm looking forward to enjoying many more conversations. I wish you success with the Celestial Lodge of Sirius, and I suspect I'll be interacting with it in one way or another. I will post links with today and periodically as I list know your major stages and I will include you there and include a link to that as well.
Thank you. And thank you for doing that and having me on. You know, I love our conversations and I hope the listeners like it too, you know, and, you know, I'm very grateful and humbled that you let me on your show. It's just such a joy to do. You're a great guy. So thank you very much.
I feel the same way about you. And thanks to everybody who listened in, whether you're listening live or whether you're going to listen later on. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And I don't have a lot of songs here, so I'll play Mighty Elohim by Linnell Griffin, which seems appropriate. Take care. Thanks again, Olaf.
Thank you. Bye.
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 Down the trumpet.